So welcome everybody.
Because they outgrew this equipment, or to ask very general questions. Can we ask about participation? Can we ask about quality of life? Are they happy with their lives? Are they doing the activities they would like to be doing? And also in terms of preferences, so create groups and social activities that that include their preferences into the interventions. Other things that we do not necessarily usually include in interventions, but then again, because they require outsourcing, they require other resources that are not frequently in the rehab center or in the clinical practice level, are to have more activities outside the home and less parent-mediated. So for adolescents, that's what we would expect in terms of age-appropriate activities. And also to have to advocate and for community intervention. So support the creation of new adapted integrated programs and influence policymaking. And then addressing barriers in the environment. So are we missing programs in the real world? So kids who are protected in special schools, they need programs that are in their community, they're in their neighborhood, that they can access easily without having to be part of some special or segregated group. And to consider what are the new challenges for adolescents, such as transportation. It's been huge. All adolescents have mentioned that, and across different studies, how adaptive transportation would be key to facilitate or to make possible for them to participate. So again, we're thinking about the two levels and how we can integrate them. Then, after having done the study, we realized, okay, so what? We went back to the rehab centers where we had recruited our adolescents. And what we heard across the board was, wow, these are not things that we can do, because these are things that are really outside our power to do within the clinical setting limitations. So there was this huge gap with, okay, these findings are interesting, but there's nothing we can do about it. So we started to think, okay, how then we can transform, or what evidence is missing, or what type of information do we need that can be relevant for policy then? So how can we get this data and transform into something that is useful, that is applicable at a policy level, at a program development level? And those are really complicated, because as we talk to different researchers and clinicians and program managers, people really didn't know that. They were really like, well, yes, that's interesting, but the rehab, the results, the type of indicators, the type of data that we produce often in rehabilitation research is not informative for policy. It's not big enough, it's not concrete enough, and all sort of different information. So start, okay, let's go one step back and look which are the policies that already exist that can support leisure participation. Because again, rehab clinicians and even families who participated in our study, nobody really knew what type of policies exist. So many resources that may be available, people don't know about. So if we're talking about policy, then we realize, okay, we have to size the problem and to make sure that we understand what's the population impact of it. So we started to look back at data, like, you know, over 90 million children ages 0 to 14 years old in the world have disability, some sort of type of disability. 200,000 children all in Canada, that's some significant number. It's more than it extrapolates from our 200 adolescent sample. And also to use a different approach to it, as not as leisure is important because, well, it's nice to play, that's interesting, it's good for kids, no. To try to use an approach that was rights-based. So it's a right by the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, plays a right by the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So there's enough to support and to make a case for leisure promotion for these kids. And then also, how can we, and it's an integral part of activities that compose health according to WHO. So these are the factors that we pick it in to see, okay, what exists, what can we offer to families in terms of information, and what does not exist, and how can we use research to inform that gap. So we did know, we look at families of children with disabilities like in Canada, and they report high distress and fewer opportunities to engage in leisure. So that's from PALS information that we can, from the Participation Active Limitation Survey by Stats Canada. We also have the social mode of disability, which is part of Canada's composition of policies and legislation around disabilities, which is understanding that disability as a socially created process and not as an individual need. So if we look at the children who have less mobility and they're participating less, facing more barriers, then we look at the other side and say, well, it's the environment that should be providing access to everybody and not the opposite. Then we wanted to describe the current national and provincial legislation that could support leisure. So just to give you an overview, for those who are not familiar with the numbers around disability, those were the proportion of kids with disabilities in the different provinces. And we found indeed, so we did search, we did a systematic search of policies in all different departments, in health, in child and youth and family ministry according to the province, of the province, and also in terms of the federal level, which were the supports that were specific to leisure. And we did find some interesting, first, broad general documents, such as Leveling the Playing Field, which is a report, a standing committee report, which is very comprehensive in terms of what Canada should be doing to address leisure participation of individuals with disabilities. And then there was also an emphasis on sports, the like high-level competitive sports promotion, Special Olympics type of thing, and general guidelines about accessibility and funding for families, such as, you know, the art tax credit, the fitness tax credit, but that if we look at the really specifications, they don't really address the needs of the families the way they should. Often the families who need the most do not qualify for deductions, or the ones that qualify have a proportion that is not enough to cover not even one semester of activity. So those are all issues that were around the policies, and that's what we wanted to analyze. When I look at the provinces, at the provincial level, the majority of provinces do have a big statement about disabilities. So they would have policy guidelines that should be used for development at the different levels, including leisure for some, and some do not even mention leisure as part of the disability issues. So Quebec actually has some interesting programs. Ontario has other related to sports. So different provinces have a lot about adaptive transportation. Majority of provinces do have that. But again, the problem here was that we found that for the majority of the policy documents, there were no specific issues for kids with disabilities or not specific for leisure of some sort. So this was seemed to be a very complex interaction that was not present in the documents. We looked at two provinces that had actual best practices ideas. So using the disability lens tool, which was developed as part of all government actions. And so there was PI, had a pretty interesting and document developed. They did have a training of personnel, so they act in different areas as well. So training of personnel in health, in education, and community, using other mechanisms to facilitate, to make information available for all families, and using a lot of population-based data, so surveys and questionnaires distributed to the population to inform their policies, and some theoretical frameworks such as the ICF and other federal level documents. Saskatchewan also had an interesting policy which included, you know, benchmarking, which was interesting, so with specific dates to measure outcomes, which was different from the majority of policies that just were broad documents with no specific benchmarking or specific accomplishments that should be made by a determined time so that people could monitor and make sure that this was being used. The gaps then, in this case, was, as I mentioned, so if many policies for individuals with disabilities did not address children, many policies for children did not address disabilities, many policies addressing basic needs, activities of daily living or transportation, would not include leisure as part of the basic needs, and many policies addressing leisure would not include disabilities. So this triangle of leisure, disability, and children was really hard to address in these policies. And the use of research-based evidence was really scarce, so we could not find research, academic research, as used in this document. So this gap, that and this was the other bridge to cross then, realized, well, so if we could inform research with the research that we have so far, and ally this to policy, would that cause, would that have an impact on leisure promotion? And so we did a critical discourse analysis, and that's what I'm in the process of finishing now, interviewing key informants in policy, in childhood disability research, policy research, and program managers, asking basically what are the barriers and facilitators, which is something that we've been asking a lot of knowledge translation research, but now specifically related to use of research, of rehabilitation research for children with disabilities to promote leisure, and what would be the best practices. What we're finding so far in, is that on the policy side of the bridge, it's really, there is a whole a perception that evidence, research-based evidence, as we know as academics, is really a small part and has a relative role in the big scene, in the big scenario. And disability is one lens that people have to use, and nobody will deny that it's important, but it's only one of them. There are women, there are Aboriginal, there are all sorts of different lenses that have to be applied. And then how this plays to the ability to finalize and to do something that does take into account everybody in an ethical way. So another problem is the jurisdiction for a disability. So often we had a hard time even to locate, okay, who is responsible for children with disabilities? Because again, children and family, is it leisure, like here the Malzib instead, the Educação do Asilo, is it who is responsible for children with disabilities and leisure? And crossing those areas is often a challenge. And also for policy makers, the influence of grassroots families and media was quite huge and sometimes much bigger than the influence that research could offer. And that had a play on the priority setting, the ability to choose which information to use and how to use it. On the researcher side, it seemed that unanimously all researchers found that understanding the policy process was too complex, too lengthy, too time-consuming, and that funding limitations, timing, so the timing to do a research, to complete a research is not the same time as policy. And those are like a fast-paced decisions have to be made as opposed to really lengthy cycles of applying for funding, getting funded, getting the project running, getting data out, and then the opportunity has been lost on the policy side. And also the ethics around it. So how you can use your information or twist it or adapt to make it informative for policy. And that traditional KT approaches did not work or not effective in when talking with policymakers. So that was the lack of alignment that we found on this side. But and the ways that people suggest that you to overcome those were really developing relationships. It seems to be a key part, and it's been said in different research studies showing that trust, responsive, being able to respond quickly and in a timely fashion to requests was key to be sure to influence policy. And also working collaboratively, so being able to listen what the other side has to say, which is pretty standard in KT, and be able to communicate on the right way, succinct, short, effective communication. And then in being able to integrate non-traditional stakeholders on the table, that seems to be the challenge as an OT, as a rehab professional, or even as a researcher. Those are like policymakers, decision makers, and not people we used to bring to the table or even to think about. And whereas in other areas, even in health research, other areas are much more used to call this different stakeholders to the table. And also find alternative funding, as the traditional funds do not often cover the time that it takes to develop those relationships and the efforts that are part of this as well. And to be able to find strategic and creative solutions to integrate what people want into research programs. So this was a bit of the complex model that we're trying to come up with, but understanding that many of these factors are common for any knowledge translation process and for any research to policy process. But there are some specific factors for children with disabilities that we have to consider. Children with disabilities are a vulnerable population, underrepresented in the majority of events and decision making, often represented by families, so they need to be included, and that's a challenge. Also, the fact that some disabilities are more emphasized than others for all sort of historic reasons, but let's say the majority of people interviewed would say that autism was something that they've heard of, they know how, they have ideas of what to do and what's needed, and not other types of disabilities. So what is the type of historic process that has built into some types of disabilities being more important than others, but not necessarily in a bad way, but how can we learn from that to bring up other issues? And also competing interests, which is present in every process. So it's really comes down to research coming up with very complex sort of ideas, and that's not coincidence. That's the type of information that we come up with in different studies. And policymakers having to deal with even more complex maps and other things that are not even about the road or the bridge, it's about the big picture. And then we end up with a gap. So the way that, just to wrap it up, so my time is going. So we have been trying to work collaboratively, I have a hard time with this word, in different projects that are trying to address that. We've done recently a scoping review of integrated knowledge translation practices in rehabilitation research, just to find that many stakeholders are involved and are being more and more involved in rehab research, but not policymakers. They're just not even mentioning that one study. So again, this is a bridge that is in construction. We've got a CHR dissemination grant now, which is the results of that first study I presented on the determinants of leisure, to be able to bring stakeholders to the table, and we'll have like three forums to discuss that. So we have policymakers, family, youth with disabilities, and parents and clinicians to discuss, okay, what are the strategies? Knowing what we know, how can we move this forward in the different agendas? We have, as part of this project, we're developing an app that aims at collecting information, so providing information for children. If you want to do a leisure activity for parents and for youth, so you can locate the leisure activity according to your needs, according to your adaptations, and close to your neighborhood. And the idea is that we're going to link this with the information provided from the Office des Personnes Handicapées du Québec of programs that already exist, so that we can inform back programs, okay, these are being highly used, these are not being used, this area needs more services. And that's the idea, that we can integrate user needs to programs that are currently existing. We've also working we created CP Canada Network that has the representation of parent associations, CP parenting associations across Canada, and to do different petitions around CP to develop different actions and work on a shared research agenda, research impacts for them, for what the associations, what the parents need. And also we are organizing a developmental disabilities stakeholder dialogue with the McMaster Health Forum and Neuro.net next year to be able to bring policymakers again to discuss about childhood disabilities. I will skip that. Then there are interesting other projects like that are happening here. Like OMI, it's a project that we're recently on, that is about music and using adaptive music instruments to provide access for children and to integrate rehab, school setting, and to promote what type of changes we can promote at that level for kids. And remember, the music was the most preferred activities for adolescents, so that is exciting as well. I've also working with the office, the OPHQ, and federal government to try to convene how can we use data that has been generated in research, such as the Quebec CP registry, and integrate that with data that is from OPHQ, that is of programs that already exist, to combine that and think of interventions that act at those two levels. So using the type of information that is used with the type of information we generate. I just mentioned that UNICEF is also interested in mapping childhood disabilities in low and middle income countries, and that we're contributing on this manual that is looking at participation, environmental barriers, and knowledge translation, so for children with disabilities in low and middle income countries, which is a whole other set of challenges, and knowledge translation and information to a very different context that it's a part of what we're doing now. So this is the plan for several ideas on how to have, you know, children and families. For us, as you know, as an OT, children and families are at the core of every action that we're doing. But being able to integrate policies and services and environmental features, and having a dialogue with everybody that we can, how we can bring those discussions to the table, to in different actions and programs, is the goal of my research program, so that we can have beautiful bridges coming to beautiful places. We expect some traffic jam, it's always part of the process. Barriers, construction is always a problem, and it's always a matter of reevaluating and finding how we can overcome those and how we can fix those relationships and how we can promote and foster those encounters to take us to different directions. But well, that's the other side, right? So we can go, I mean, and if we transit enough on those bridges, you can feel like you're going home, right, at some point. You feel comfortable enough to transit that, and that's what we want to promote, so that we can work through our issues to come together and promote participation for children with disabilities. Thank you. That's it.
Okay, so it's interesting that Keiko used the Champlain Bridge as an example of a successful bridge. Questions? Maybe I'll start off so people can get there. So towards the end, you're sort of skipping through things quite fast. You hit a point in which you mentioned the problem with research and policy, which is that research, essentially, the way I translated it, research functions at a different kind of time scale than
right.
policy, right?
Right.
And then you mentioned some interventions that seem to be successful, like you paused on HALMI, but then there were other ones as well that you went through as well. So I was wondering if there was anything you could say about ways in which those particular interventions had overcome or had dealt with that kind of, you know, disconnect between the policy world and
So I have a few examples that were mentioned as part of my postdoc project.